At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I'm John Batchelor with Daisy Dunn. Her new book, The Missing Thread, A Women's History of the Ancient World. Daisy is a classicist. She has the Greek. She has Latin. My understanding is she's going to conquer Linear A, and she has Linear B, all these languages. We're going past the Minoans, although that's a wonderful chapter. The Minoans favored cosmetics. Others favored cosmetics, too. We're now going to a part of the story that is well known if I say it takes place on the island of Lesbos. It's also well known if I say it takes place through the person of Sappho, the poetess. However, what it was not well known to me is that of the reputation of Lesbos, it was that it was women, beautiful women everywhere, the beauties of Lesbos, except Sappho was said to be short and dark. Was she considered homely, Daisy?
She is very unfair, I have to say, on poor Sappho, because we don't have any representations to be able to judge what she actually looked like. Most of the people who've described her as being very unattractive and short and dark, as you say, are people living hundreds of years after she survived, so they could not possibly have seen her. But the thing with Sappho is that because she comes from this island, which in the 7th century BC, when she was living, had long been established as a place where beautiful women resided, because she wasn't known for her beauty, she was known for something else. I think that kind of gave rise to this rumor that, okay, she was a poet because she wasn't one of the winners of one of the great beauty contests that was being held there. She wrote, or she composed and she performed instead.
Sappho was inheriting a tradition that was long-standing, poetry. And she invented something called the sapphic stanza, which is quite different than hexameter. I'm unused to it. But at the same time, she was part of a political turmoil. Her brothers were part of a political turmoil. Mytilene was Sappho's city, and it was involved, this is on the coast of what we now call Turkey, in the Hellene world. Sappho was involved through her brothers in two different cities, and I believe they had a correspondence with Athens. This is all happening at the same time. The dates I write down for when Sappho went into exile was 605 BCE to 590 BCE. What is happening in the Greek world at that time is with the 7th century turns to the 6th BCE?
It's a great period of change. So historically, it's been many of these city-states that form Greece have been ruled and occupied by the elite, by the aristocratic people in society. And suddenly there's a change. There are people who are rising up saying, that's not what we want anymore. We want to represent our people. We've come from a different sort of background. We want out with the old and in with the new. And Sappho is from an aristocratic family. So her brothers, her family falls foul of the sort of regime change that happens on Lesbos. And this is why we find her being sent off into exile. She goes to Sicily. And while she's there, there's a sort of a change in king. There's a change in leadership. And there are sort of various attempts. Lots of people with sort of coups and things to try and overthrow these people. But they finally get a more stable leader, and he's actually praised as being a great sort of lawmaker. But essentially, sort of across the Greek world, this is a period of change and revolution.
And that's the period that Solon emerges from in Athens, the lawgiver. But we're talking of women here, although Daisy's done us the favor of putting the women in context of the historical period turning century after century. Daisy, I don't think I'll surprise you to say I was very taken by Dorycha, the woman who was so beloved by one of Sappho's brothers that he sacrificed things for her. And did Sappho write of her?
She did. I mean, with Sappho, we only have fragments of her work that have been dug up on sort of little sections of papyri from Egypt. But we know that she wrote of this woman, Dorica, as we might call her. Pronunciations are always sort of changeable. She was essentially a courtesan. She was a prostitute working in Egypt. And one of Sappho's brothers, Caraxes, was a trader. And we read of him going over and essentially buying the freedom of this woman. And Sappho does not like this wonderful bit. She is infuriated by the decision of her brother to do this, not because she thinks that her brother shouldn't be seeing a prostitute. We don't quite know what the relationship between these two individuals was, but she thinks that it will make Dorica haughty and arrogant to be shown such favor by a man in her brother's position. And Dorica, we read of her in other sources as well. She actually uses some of this money to buy a selection of oxen spits, which she deposits at the site of Delphi, where the famous oracle used to proclaim, doing so knowing that then people would visit in their thousands and they'd learn her name. So she'd become someone who was spoken about and remembered after her time. And I think Sappho just maybe had a bit of kind of class prejudice against her.
Competitive, you emphasize that. Sappho is competitive. Andromeda and Gorgo, two of her students who found separate schools. So Sappho was, what you'd have to say, the jealous boss of an Oxford of its time. Is that how to understand this?
That's a really interesting way of putting it, yeah. So she has her own school for girls. She teaches girls music. Music is kind of performed with poetry as well. And she is really cross when two of her former pupils decide Andromeda sets up a rival school, and then this other girl decides to join it. So pupils are basically leaving her school and going to her former pupil's school instead. And rather than being pleased, she is just very, very jealous and quite protective of what she's established.
Sappho's poetry includes the images of weavers. Was that long established that women are weavers and they understood the metaphor for the weaving of your life? Did they talk that way?
I think so, very much so. I mean, weaving and ancient women go hand in hand. They do it for thousands of years through our history. We know in the Bronze Age, women were weaving, making extraordinary clothes. And then in the Roman period, likewise, they're all weaving. They're making their husbands' clothes. They're doing all sorts of things. But it went beyond the kind of practical use of weaving. There are stories, we know, in the myths people talk of at that time of the Fates. And the Fates were these sort of spinners who would spin out in the same way that women were weaving the kind of course of people's lives. And there was certainly a parallel between these spinners and the sort of everyday spinning that people were, that mortals were engaged in.
Final 30 seconds, Daisy. Sappho, Zand, we're unclear of, but there's one story saying she threw herself off a cliff for love. Do you believe that?
Absolutely not.
Neither do I. I'm glad to hear it. Daisy Dunn is the author. The Missing Thread, A Women's History of the Ancient World. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.